Hi, I'm Abra, and you're listening to the podcast from MinSpec, the Minnesota Speculative Fiction Writers Group. We meet monthly to learn more about the craft of writing. We also have a very active message board at www.meetup.com/MNSPEC. Welcome to Episode 6, Rejection. Michael Merriam, author of numerous published shorts and novels, heads a panel of MinSpec writers to discuss how to handle those ego-deflating rejection letters. But first, let me go over the things that our members have been up to lately. We had a little gap in the podcast, so the list is longer than usual. Eli Effinger Weintraub's guest post on the Clarion blog, Writer's Craft No. 18, Who Edits You?, is about the fine art of choosing who to ask for feedback on your manuscript. Andrea Guillard has started an amusing blog, Pounce, because every question deserves a silly answer. You can find it at www.tylertork.com/Q&A. Michael Merriam's space opera novelette, Memory, has been podcast in two parts at Beam Me Up, see episode number 264. Also, his debut novel, Last Car to Anwin Station, is released and available for purchase at Carina Press, Barnes & Noble, and Amazon. Stay tuned after the end of this podcast to hear a special sneak preview. Terry Faust's Z is for Xenophobe, the true tale of the future cyborgization of humankind into the Omnian invasion army destined to attack the planet Vegia, is now available through Samsdot Publishing. David Steffen's Fruitful is now available as part of the Digital Science Fiction Volume 2, Therefore I Am. It is currently available in Kindle and other ebook formats and should be available in print any day now. His short story, The Infinite Onion, is also now posted for free reading on AE, Canadian Science Fiction Review. Dan Reed Shaman, writing as James Ossuary, has the short story February, The Hunter's Moon, appearing in the Pill Hill anthology Leather, Denim, and Silver, Legends of the Monster Hunter. Roy C. Booth and R. Thomas Riley's Shards of the Broken is out in Darker Than Noir, a hard-boiled horror anthology from Grand Mal Press. His film, The Day Lufbery Won It All, is also now available on Amazon.com. In a not-so-distant dystopian future, a young man walks into a bar hoping to hustle someone at a game of pool. When he takes on an odd bet for his immortal soul from a kid over a simple game of pool, will he walk away with the kid's ultimate prize? Or will he walk away with nothing? Or something worse? More information on all of these can be found on our message board at www.meetup.com/MNSPEC in the shameless self-promotion thread. And now, on to the presentation.
All right, this is the Men's Fake Meeting about rejections and how to deal with rejections, and we'll talk about rejections and how you deal with them, and we'll probably talk about some of the interesting rejections some of us have gotten over the years in this business. Terry is doing that right now, actually.
I will just share one.
Yeah, you got a good one. You got a really good one. So we'll do the typical around-the-room introductions. Hi, I'm Michael Merriam. I'm an assistant organizer in this organization. Conventions and other things. I'm also editing the next Northern Lights Men's Spec Anthology.
Yay!
I have copies of the first one here. If somebody hasn't had one and would like to buy one, they're $11. I've still got three copies left. And I can get more from Tiger later down the road.
Okay, I'm Alfred K., and I'm an aspiring novelist, and I know I'm going to have a little problems with rejection, so I want to learn how to use them in order to build up my writing career. So I'm here, and I'm listening to the expert on that.
Isn't that awesome? You're the expert.
Wait until you see the number I put on the board.
I'm Dan Goodman, and I write science fiction and some fantasy. And I was the original assistant organizer. And these days I'm quite willing to leave the actual work of being an assistant organizer to the young folks.
I'm Don Stoltz. I'm a writer, and always good to learn how to deal with rejection and this type of thing. So I'm here to learn.
Welcome, Don.
Thank you.
Paul Zetti, I'm here also to listen to rejection. Interesting fact, I submitted one piece, Northern Lights rejected, so...
You were so close, too. You really were. That's the thing. You were so close.
So I'm learning. I'm here to learn what to expect after that.
Mm-hmm. More rejection.
Yeah, exactly.
Check him for weapons.
I really should have set myself by the door, shouldn't I?
I'm by the door.
Fight my way out of here.
I'm Hillary. My my second story sale had gotten a very impressive number of rejections before it finally actually found a home. I'm supposedly the leader in charge of this Who's Gal.
You're the organizer.
I am. I'm the official disorganizer of this group, and I do things, but like I'm actually, hosting an event this time. But I had a whole bunch of personal crap that fell in my lap, and that is now slowly falling out because things have happened, things are passing on, somebody passed on literally, and now I'm starting to get back to the swing of things, and hopefully I will be actually doing a lot more organizing with the group. So now that things are finally settling down, we are getting past everything. So
that's good.
And I really am proud of all the people, by the way, I trained up along the way who took the
group. This is why you have a gaggle of assistant organizers, so each of us could just run our own little section.
Yep.
I'm Mike Schoenberg. I too got rejected from Northern Lights. I did not take any poetry.
Yeah, we're both by the door.
I've since sold. Come back, Michael. Come back.
But there's five more outside.
There's a way I forgot to mention that I'd been rejected.
But I've since sold.
I just have to fight my way out of the building.
Maxie takes out the nunchucks.
Yeah, I have this mental image of an anthology with an introduction explaining that that they were so few that the. There were. There was such a shortage of
good stories.
usable submissions that the rest of the pages are blank.
Anyway, I've since sold two of the poems that Michael rejected, and I have more poems to go out. Magazines publishing poetry do not believe in the concept that money flows to the author.
Thank you. Hey!
There are places to sit.
You sit in the hot seat next to the presenter.
You can sit over here.
He may use you as a shield. Be careful.
Yeah, that's true. And anyway, I have more poems to send out. I also write short stories when I figure out how to finish them. Then I'll get my rejections on those.
Cool.
I'm Tim Rushford. I write science fiction, mostly set in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And I've been rejected several times, both personally and professionally. And I'm here to learn how to deal with that so I don't have to go to therapy anymore. I'm Terry Faust.
It involves these brown bottles.
Talk to my wife about the whole thing. That's her job.
Terry Faust, I just found out I'm going to get my book from Sam's Dot probably next week. I'll have it for Diversica.
So you're no longer a self-published author, are you?
You're a small press author.
Now I'm a small press author.
You've gone up in the world. This is awesome.
It is.
Is he reprinting Zia's for Xenophobe?
Yep.
Awesome.
So, and then I'm trying to get him to commit to do the sequel.
Why
is for wise guys. Let's see. And I've had, I think, two, three short stories published. One went into. So I don't have an axe to grind here.
Thanks, I appreciate that.
But then again, I'm not going to throw myself in front of a book.
Thanks.
I actually don't have an axe to grind personally, too.
I'm Conrad Zero. I have one submission that was accepted, so my rating is 100%.
Yay.
Therefore, I'm never going to submit anything. So I come here today to learn about these rejection letters of which you speak.
Some places don't really send out rejection letters, and you wait, and you have to send them a letter saying...
You just eventually realize you've been rejected. Well,
they're not even going to talk to you.
I'm Vu, and... So, what are we putting into our introductions now? Something about rejections?
Yeah, where have you been rejected?
Nowhere, really.
Because you haven't sent your stuff out.
Well, we got to fix that.
Yeah.
So, you submit something to my rejected.
Yeah, so I can reject you. Get it out of the way.
All right.
We want you to bring in rejection letters so that we can share your pain and laugh at you.
Yeah.
So, okay.
I feel your pain. It's delicious.
Yes.
My name is Margaret Taylor. I write YA fantasy, and I have been rejected by many, many novel publishers. And now I'm getting into being rejected from e-zines, short story e-zines. So I'm moving into new rejection territory.
Excellent.
Sort of pertains to you, right? What's the genre?
Fantasy. Usually main characters in their teens.
Gee, I think that's probably good. Yeah, so there's a lot of people that write Harry.
Yeah, there's a big glut right now by authors. Everybody's trying to write
Harry Potter?
No, not necessarily.
Okay. So rejections, right. Okay, so I'm going to give you my bona fides real quick about rejections. So I started writing seriously in 2002, which is pretty much when my eyes. I got to the point where I couldn't do anything except greet people at Walmart to write. Given those two choices, I decided to write. So I joined MenSpec in 2004. I'm one of the original members of this group. So, mm-hmm.
The first member of this group, by the way, was his wife, yeah. Sherry, who was alone in the group when it was just a computer editing on... for a very long time, and I joined her, and I said...
She's like, here, do something with this.
Yes, I said, can we, the two of us, work together and actually get some bodies in here? And we did.
We had our first meeting in April of that year. Mm-hmm. There was like 7 or 8 of us. So, I made my first sale.
Yay!
In 2005. I made a whopping $25.
Wow.
That's really actually pretty good, though.
Yeah. So, your job now is to guess how many rejections I got before that first sale.
20.
300.
25.
40.
Oodles?
Oodles. That's a scientific term. Oodles. Oodles.
102. Wow. Okay. Oh, that's good.
That was in the right ballpark.
102 rejections. So, and really... 1 to 100 early in your career, that's a good ratio. I know that may be kind of a sad and heartbreaking thing to hear, but when you talk to a lot of short fiction writers, they'll tell you that 50 to 150 rejections before you start to make the sales is the norm. That's mostly if you're starting at the top and then working your way down, because you're starting with the top markets where the competition's, god-awful fierce. and then you work your way down and you make your first sale to, you know, some nice little semi-professional magazine. And so, but since then, since the first sale in the 100 odd rejections, I've sold a novel and 3 novellas and 4 novelettes and 36 short stories and 2 collections and 2 anthologies and some flash and some poems and about 75 other things. So I've got 75 sales. Now, anybody want to guess how many rejections I have?
It'd be 7,500.
The percentage is held.
I don't think the percentage was held.
They didn't.
I don't think it did because it certainly didn't hold for me. I would say that what you probably have is 1,000 rejections overall, because you're going to have you're still hitting all the top markets with everything you send out. So my guess is you've got at least 2 rejections per piece, unless you're doing something specifically for a specific market that they're requesting. Am I correct on this?
Pretty close. Any other guesses for the exact number? No.
I was so close.
That counts as about 1,000.
That really, that was pretty close.
948. I counted up the other day.
Actually, there is
short stories, everything. Novels is where you're really going to start to get hammered, because if you go the agent submission route, you know there's 50, 60, 70 agents out there you could submit to, and they'll reject you pretty quickly. Most of them will kill you pretty fast, and you can send out simultaneous submissions to agents usually, unlike with publishers. So you can really get thumped. As far as in the pain thing, I've had 16 rejections over a 3-day span. 8 of them in 1 day.
Yeah, so I remember that one.
That'll put you crying in your soup.
And then right after that, I also remember you getting 5 sales that same week.
Bang, just like that. I once had 3 rejections on Christmas Eve.
And you know why you get them on Christmas
Eve? Because all the editors are off.
Right. Because editors don't have time to do this at their desks. They do it when they are home or on the subway or whatever, and so they were all off and they were just going through their slush piles.
Right. So in perseverance, I had 20 rejections on a short story that I eventually sold to a very nice small press magazine. So don't stop. The novel that I have that came out this year, rejections from agents and publishers before I sold it.
Mm-hmm. Did you revise it any time between the rejections?
Yes. So the thing is that the biggest thing about rejections is you just have to be. One of my favorite quotes by another writer, you know, we all have our favorite quotes by other writers, is by Karen Jo Fuller. And she said that the reason she succeeded was not because she was the best writer in her writing group, not because she wanted it more than the other writers in her writing group, not because she was better educated or could handle the words better. She succeeded because she was the toughest. Because that's what rejections is really all about. It's about being tough. Because they suck. They suck. And I know that all of you guys have gotten some rejections in here probably at one time or another. It doesn't feel any better, ever. But the important thing to remember about rejections, the best way to deal with the rejection, is to turn the piece around and get it right back out. Because once you know, 96 rejections on NASCAR, those all got wiped out the moment Harlequin offered me a contract. They don't matter now, because I have a contract. And that's the important thing, I think, to remember, is that once you make that sale of that piece, that number goes away. Doesn't matter. 102? Doesn't matter. Sold that first one. 20? Doesn't matter. Sold that story. 948?
That might matter to me, actually.
Doesn't matter. But it doesn't matter.
Okay. Everyone keeps sending out.
Yeah, just
more stuff.
So,
Michael, do they sometimes give? I mean, what's the percentage of them telling you why they reject you? Do they just say
very small?
No, thank you.
It's very, very small, okay. Especially in the short fiction markets because they're so horribly overwhelmed. I was a slush reader for Fantasy Magazine, which was a Civil Pro magazine, and I was a slusher for them for about a year. And I read personally. I was one of the 4 slushers. I read 300 to 600 submissions a month. and I got about a quarter of the submissions. So it's just a ridiculous number. And it doesn't really get any lighter at the semi-pro level. Before I slushed for them, I slushed it from the Asylum, which was a small press semi-pro harzine. It was the first place I ever slushed. And about 200 submissions a month that you've got to get through. And the easiest slush pile I ever ran was Northern Lights, quite frankly, because it was just this group. It was a fairly manageable number. It was a lot of reprints, so there was a lot of high-quality writing. And even the stories I rejected, a lot of them I thought were very, very close. And I'm looking around the room at some of the people I rejected, and they were some of the very last stories I rejected, quite frankly. Hall and Gaia were the last two.
I'll move away from the door now.
they were the last two. You guys were just so incredibly close.
When you read slush, and then there's just tons and tons of things there, and you can't do it all. what is there about a manuscript that
that screams no or screams yes?
Both.
You learn really quick to recognize what's not going to work, usually within the first page, sometimes within the first paragraph. Mm-hmm. The writing is technically off. That's your first killer. Okay, your first killer is you didn't follow submission guidelines. Mm-hmm. That's the easy rejection. And I'm sorry, you might have written the greatest thing since hot buttered popcorn was invented. But if you sent it on toilet paper and green crayon, we didn't read it. I'm sorry. That's the easy rejection.
I said you might have used it.
Yeah, I might have used it. But I didn't buy it. So that's the easy rejection. So there's your first way to not get rejected, is read the submission guidelines and follow them and believe in them. And, for Northern Lights, I'm being way more forgiving. But I'll be honest with you, I've had a couple of submissions that were nowhere even close to the very simple guidelines that I set up. And I set up very simple industry standard guidelines.
So I have a question for you for the next Northern Lights. So you're going to read poems?
I am.
Okay.
I am going to read poems. So send them on in. They'll be a hard sell, but I'm going to read poems.
Even reprints, huh?
Even reprints. One of the things I changed in this guideline was what I was looking for. So I'm going to be more interested in flash, and I'm going to be more forgiving of longer pieces. Because one of my favorite pieces in Northern Lights was way over the 7,500 words that I stated. I bought Light and Morehouse's Bright Light City Lights at 9,600 words because it was just a fantastic story. And I'm like, oh, I have to have this, and I don't know why Lida, who hasn't sold this before, is sending this to me for mocha money. But I'm not going to complain. And so I am going to read for that.
Sell it elsewhere.
She was having trouble selling it elsewhere because it was really a regional piece.
Yeah.
It was a St. Paul story, and she was having trouble selling it elsewhere. Was what it was. I talked to her about it at MiniCon this year.
I mean, that's why Neil Gaiman sends to Toto.
Yeah, because it's a hard piece to place.
He sends his weird stuff to Toto, the things that the other big-name fantasy mags won't touch of his.
Mm-hmm.
He sends to Toto, and Toto is ecstatic because... It's going to sell the magazine just that
night. Oh, yeah, it'll sell a ton of magazines. So follow the guidelines. I mean, that's the first way to not get rejected, frankly, right there. That'll get you in the door. Proper use of the English language is really the next thing I look for. I would look for, and you would be amazed at how many people couldn't really use the English language effectively. Couldn't spell. They thought that they had a word processor and some fingers, and that meant they could write. And no. And then after that, you start to see the same old cliched stories. You start to see stories that are okay, but I'm not buying okay because I'm a simple pro magazine. You start to see stories that are really good but fall apart in the middle, or stories that I stuck with them because the writing was solid and then found out that they started five pages in, and that's where the story actually started. And then you have to start making choices at that point, is do you ask for a rewrite? Usually, you've got so many submissions of simple pro magazines that we don't. Quite frankly, the small press magazines are way more inclined, if you're close, to ask for rewrites. but that's how you get rejected. What we look for is, you look for tight writing, you look for a novel idea, you look for something you haven't seen anymore, you look for a new twist on something.
Realms of Fantasy said that they only did 2 rewrite requests in 1 year.
I've done one of them, and then still didn't sell.
Yep. They only did 2 rewrite requests because it was so close and something, and there was something so neat and different about it that they decided to go ahead and send the rewrite request. But it's real. And that's usually when they are teetering on the edge of buying it.
Mm-hmm. What's the title of this piece that you did?
No, I didn't. I sold to Realms.
I sold to Realms, but
I had talked to their slush pile reader. I'd actually had a lot of conversations with him. And
Doug.
And he had published statistics and stuff. And I think it's something like 3 or 4 new writers that they take. They wind up selling to them a year. I mean, almost everybody else has credits elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the rare person who breaks in and
it's hard.
As their first sale to Realms. I was one of them. Mm-hmm. But that was, a whole bunch of rejections later on on other things.
Tell your sales story about Realms to Fantasy.
Oh, okay.
Here's a rejection story. We'll go to your rejection story.
I will preface it with first my rejection things. I got lots and lots of rejections. And because my stuff is a little bit on the different side, people tended to read it all the way through. I knew this because instead of when I got rejections from FNSF, I didn't get the "it didn't hold me" or "it didn't grab me" rejections. I got the "I like blankety blankety blank about your story, but have problems with this." So one line personal rejections. I've got all the kind of rejections from the mainstream markets, because my stuff was between mainstream and fantasy, that said, "We loved your story, we passed it around the office, we thought this was really great." Almost all my rejections began with "we loved your story."
Zotrobal story, which is driving me crazy.
Yeah, they almost always began with that, and they said, "But in the end, it was just had too many fantastic elements for us, and we decided that you'd probably be better off doing the fantasy market." Same deal with the fantasy ones. They were always saying, "Have you tried the mainstream markets?" So I was somewhere in between, and I was being driven crazy by this. I had just gotten my rejection from FNSF on this story, Run of the Fiery Horse, which was really bizarre. It was a rejection like Gordon Van Gelder. From Gordon Van Gelder I'd never gotten before, which was, "This is a really great story, but not for me at this time." And I was like, You didn't say why. Yeah. It was like, what? So I sent it into Realms, and I was in the lost bag of mail that they had, and so I was stuck there for months without hearing anything. And I was about to send my note in saying, withdrawing my story so I can send it somewhere else. And Naomi Pritzker said, "I'll kill you if you do that. Don't do it. Just leave it there." So I did. And then I got an email from Shauna. And it said, "We really loved your story." And I thought, oh, my first personal rejection from Shauna. I didn't even recognize my first acceptance letter because it read exactly like my rejection thing. Because she talked about what she liked about it. And I said, she didn't say why she didn't buy the story. And I read it like 5 times until I saw the line, "Oh, we've sent the hard copy off to our publisher. Could you send us an email copy?" Because she didn't say yes, and she didn't say she was buying it. And I was so used to, it had all the same key phrases on my rejection letters that, it was like, and so I had to write her back an email. I said, "Wait a minute, just to be clear, you're buying the story, right?" And she laughed, and she said, and she wrote back, "LOL, yes, I am buying your story." That's when I announced it. I didn't even announce it then, because I was like, I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
It's one of my favorite stories about
you. You said something about something you wrote that was very novel. Very original. Is that true, or is writer did?
Some people thought so. It was the grand sheet. It was the grand sheet, and it was a fairy tale, and it was in between.
It's a great little story, I think.
Yeah, but it was in between all the regular markets.
Yeah, I can see where that was a totally top sale. And while you sold it to the market, you eventually sold it to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, Rome's, that was the one that I got the promising note, not the go-away note from Rome's, but the promising note with a more like this, please, from Rome's.
The old form of promise.
Yeah, it was handwritten on the form. Mm-hmm. And I was like, huh. You know, so, I mean, which is why, you know, the next one, you know, after it went to Gordon Van Gelder, it went to Rums. But, yeah, it was just, I had trouble distinguishing between actually acceptance letters and rejection letters. It was just.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, acceptance letters can be weird, too. Like, the story that Realms of Fantasy asked me to rewrite, and I rewrote it, and then Shauna held it for forever and a day, and we really thought I was going to sell it to her, and then she decided she didn't want it, which was probably one of the most heartbreaking rejections I've ever gone through.
Right.
Frankly, that was really one of the low points.
And I think she was probably feeling bad about letting it go.
Probably, because she held it for a long, long time. I eventually did sell that story to a first-tier semi-professional market. I sold it to Fictitious Force. And the acceptance letter, the first line in the acceptance letter was, I hate this story. The story drove me nuts, and I'm buying it. Like, great. I don't care if you hate it, as long as you're paying me.
And
cash your check.
Burn as many copies as you want, but you got to buy it.
But you got to buy it.
No, but getting a strong emotion, hate, love, whatever, that's what counts.
That's exactly what counts, is the strong emotion. I, when I was at Fantasy Magazine, I passed things up to my editor where I'm reading it. I'm there on my screen, and I'm going, I hate this. Why am I still reading about these people? Sean, I think we should buy this. So the thing about rejections, most of the rejections that you're going to see are going to be basic form rejections. They're going to be, dear author, no. Mm-hmm.
Of your 96 rejections, how many times did you resubmit Last Car?
Resubmit Last
Car?
Can you
break that down? How many submissions did you send total, and how many of those were like resubmission before you got rejected?
I went back and like rewrote it and stuff. Basically, what I did with the agent hunt, when I was on the agent hunt with it, is I picked my six dream agents and I sent it to my six dream agents and got rejected by all six dream agents. One of them gave me some feedback. It was Jennifer Jackson. Why at Donald Moss Agency, about why she didn't feel like she could represent this novel, even though she thought it was a pretty good novel and it was pretty tight and it was pretty well written. And she gave me a couple of lines of feedback, and so I went in and I worked on it some more. And then I sent it out to my next six and the next six, and I cycled down like that. And a lot of the rejections that I was getting was, we think this is a really good novel. I would represent it, except I don't think I can sell this as a first novel. And I was like, well, that bites. What do you mean you don't think you can sell this first novel? And I got to talk to Jack Burney, Burney and Sternick, about that, because he was one of the ones who said that. He said, I don't think I can sell this as a first novel. And so I went to Jack, and I said, Jack, why? Because I knew the guy. And he said, well, he said, the problem is that it's just going to have regional appeal because you sit at Minneapolis, and we're not sure that it's going to find a wide audience because your protagonists are lesbians. I'm like, what? And so I was a little upset about that. And then I started trying publishers with it, and I got very similar reactions from publishers. They thought it was a really well-written novel. They thought it was very good. They didn't think they could get the house behind it. I heard a lot of that from the editors. Mm-hmm. We don't think we can get the house behind it.
That must be why so much fiction is set in New York.
Probably, so you can get the house behind it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm just thinking about it. Just so many novels, fantasy novels, are set in
New York or New Boston.
New York or San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Boston, New York, Boston, San Francisco. Those are the main settings I see over again. Over and over again.
So I got a lot of, we don't think we can get the house behind it. I had a relationship with Korean Press at Harlequin. I had sold them a novella already. I had sold them, I got postcards. Am I not marketing mine? I had sold them Should Be Gotten Feathered Sleep, and they were really pleased with it. And there's postcards for that. Lovely cover. And so I asked my editor there, I said, can I send you this novel? And she said, God, please, yes. And so I sent it to her. And I didn't, you know, tell her anything else about, you know, where all I had sent it before. So it's in the cover for the last card. You know, God, please take them. They're free. Yeah, just pass them around.
Mail to your friends.
And so I sent that into Karina Press, which is a Harlequin imprint, and they're an ebook publisher, of course. So they're a little more inclined to take risks. They were a brand new imprint. And I was kind of banking on the fact that they would be willing to take a little bit of a risk on it. And Angela James, the publisher at Karina, called me up, and she said, yeah, we absolutely want this. I'm like, seriously. So it's a little stunning.
I knew that that would sell. That was the thing that was just...
You were one of the readers on that, as I recall. You and Jay...
Right, yeah. I knew it would sell. The thing was that I couldn't believe that it hadn't sold earlier.
Well, yeah, because I've been finding that since... I finished the first draft in 2007.
Yeah.
You guys had it in 2008, and I started marketing it late 2008 or late 2009. I'm not exactly sure. And then I sold it early this year. And so again, you know, it's just you got to persevere, and you got to figure out what your market is. Another way you can help yourself not get rejected is don't send science fiction to a magazine that says right in its title, Fantasy Magazine. I saw a lot of that when I was a fantasy. I did a lot of science fiction. I'm like, well, why? Why are you doing that? So
can we take this card and send it to Karina Press and get your book?
Yes, you can.
Because I put a note out and said, you know, I'd like to buy hard copy because I don't read ebooks. And Dan and Baird said, well, just buy it as an ebook. I never read ebooks.
Buy it as a PDF and print.
Okay.
That's what you can do. You can buy it in PDF.
Yeah, I was going to give it to my daughter. It's a little hard to. It's like, here's a PDF.
Here's
a handbook.
At some point, the nooks are getting more and more attractive as are the Kindles.
I really like the nooks. I think I'm going to end up buying one probably pretty soon.
I'm starting to feel the push towards it, especially for magazine reading. Now, if I can only get all of my fiction magazines on, it would be great.
I think they're heading that way.
So did you say that if you use the setting of New York or is this San Francisco or Chicago, that's too common, and that would set off or cause a
I don't think it
I think it'll help you.
Yeah, if you know those places.
If you know those
cities.
Yeah,
I know those places.
The problem is a lot of people try and set things in places that they don't know. But I mean, I prefer personally reading stuff that isn't set there. I just keep noticing over and over again fantasy novels, especially YA fantasy novels for first-time authors. It's modern fantasy, urban fantasy. Oh, look.
It's in New York.
It's in New York. Or
San Francisco.
Yeah,
I have a comment, but I just read Diane Duane's, she has a series, say you want to be a
wizard.
Mm-hmm. And the last one is The Wizard of Mars. Mm-hmm. I'm reading it and it's like, you know, I'm reading this as an adult. I'm finding it parts of really boring because of my, but, you know, she's preaching good qualities to teenagers. Sometimes. Mostly. And it's set in and around New York, is the local area. But she doesn't say New York. You have to know enough about the location to pick it up. And I'm wondering, you know, agents are reading this and they know
it's New York. Because
they know it's New York. If I picked it up, well, I grew up there and I knew it was New York and the area. Mars, you can make up whatever you want, but she incorporated the latest research, whatever that was, for Mars. But the YA market, I thought, gee, that'd be nice. I like reading a lot of YA stuff because I don't really care for the cursing and I don't need the sex scenes because I grew up on the really old science fiction.
There's sex scenes and cursing in YA now.
Yeah, well, gee. I mean, I grew up on 1950s
science fiction. Sex.
I had someone tell me that if you were setting your story in your hometown, there has to be a reason. She said the same thing, that if it isn't set in New York or some, you know, well-known city, that it wouldn't sell.
I she said if I there's a reason. I purposely decided that I'm going to go for regional market. You know, I bang my head against the New York wall and bang my head against the New York wall and bang my head against the Sifra market wall. And I made a conscious decision to say, you know what? I know that I can build a regional base. I know I'm a strong enough writer to build a regional base, and that's what I'm going to do now.
So
I don't break out past the news of Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa.
There have been stories set in Minnesota that have sold many copies, and there's some set in Canada and other things. I mean, I don't think that this is a hard and fast thing. I'm thinking that it's sometimes harder because the agents are going, oh, yeah, I know that place. Oh, look, there's that restaurant I love to go to.
It does bias them, I think.
I think it does give you a small advantage, but I think it's only a small advantage. I think that good writing is going to stand out. In my mind, with most slush piles, you're not up against the thousands and thousands of people. Nobody in this room is up against the thousands and thousands of people. Don't let those numbers things. You're up against the top 30 stories they reach that month. That's
what?
Top 30 stories. And this is my personal theory, is that anybody in this room is up against the top 30 stories. You've gotten to the point where you can tell a good story, you have a good beginning. If your story starts on page one and doesn't drag, because that's a very hard thing to sell as a first-time short story out of the market. If you've got 18 story sales and they're all really good and they got some good press, you can have a little bit more leeway to get your story going. But you should start right out of the gate with your story. But, you know, you're up against the top 30. That's it.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, because oftentimes the pro writers, especially in short story markets, have gone to novels because that's paying the bills. The short stories are a lot of effort for not much money.
You want to tell us how much money? Analog will pay you maximum, or as much, $450 for 15,000 words or something.
It's not a lot of money.
I got around $600 for my first sale.
Yeah.
Is this a story in the Twin Cities? Do you think it would sell? And if you deliberately and purposely try to bring out some unique qualities of the Twin Cities.
I think that's good.
Some Twin Cities stories. That's pretty much all I write in now.
I think that there could be. I realize that the only thing I've done, and it's not finished because I had some problems trying to figure out how to make this work, was the Grove. That's the only thing I've done that's set in the Twin Cities Metro, and of course it's an alternate Twin Cities Metro. So it's really not recognizable as such. I don't know. I mean, everything else I've done is set elsewhere. I grew up in San Francisco. Not surprising, I did sell a short story in San Francisco setting.
Imagine that.
But, you know, I throw stuff set in India, China. I mean, you know, I'm not...
Yeah, I primarily write either in Minneapolis, St. Paul, or I write using rural Oklahoma, which is where I grew up. And I've done fairly well. You know, I've sold a story or two here and there, so it can be done.
Well, Scanlon Bull's War for the Oaks is a bestseller.
She's really kind of the mother too.
I would have a hard time setting something in the area where I grew up because, you know, it has changed, and. But in the 19, when I was growing up, the area did not, for example, the area did not have a reputation for being gay friendly.
Yeah, that's true. Your area does change.
Your
area will change, and if you don't live there anymore, you either got to kind of write in the period where you lived there, or you know, go back and see what the heck happened.
Yeah, my novel Z is for Xenophobe isn't even set in a metropolitan area. It's a fictional little southwestern farm town called Hypothermia.
I think you can't set things outside of New York and stuff. I think it's bullshit. I think if your stuff is got something about it that's really cool and sparkly, it's just harder to sell. Is the problem?
Yeah. Well, Lonsdale sets everything in West Texas.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and look at the Laurel K. Hamilton, with everything was in what was the town that it was in? I mean, it was, she knew it really well, but I'm trying to say St. Louis. I think everything was in St. Louis. She had the vampire community in St. Louis and the big tourist trip.
I think that's really more important, too, is to really know your city.
And she knew her city, and it came alive.
And that's why
you're
going to fancy authors use the cities they live in,
Jenna. Yeah, you know, Jenna K. Bonovich, the Berg, is a full-out character. I mean, Jersey. Mm-hmm. Not fancy New York. Jersey is I would say that's the second biggest character in her novel after Stephanie Plum, is the whole culture of the bird. You've got all kinds of stuff.
Can I say something about New Jersey? People in New York know New Jersey. People who've grown up will know it. And New Jersey, as she puts it, is not that different than the Bronx and Queens and parts of Brooklyn. And earlier inside parts of Long Island. I mean, she's not going out to the Hamptons. She's gone down to the nitty-gritty place with the pizza parlor. I grew up in that place, and I lived in New York. So, you know, I recognized everything. I recognized the people, the type of people, and their idiosyncrasies. And people who are editors living in New York, if they move there, they learn about it. If they grew up there, they know about it. So I don't think Stephanie Plum and Janet Ivanovich should be considered outside of New York.
One thing I'd say to get back to the whole idea of rejection, because doggone it, I love it. You can use your rejection to propel you on. And I just dug these two out. I finished Disease for Xenophil back in, I think it was like 2002 or 2003. And sent it out, and it was different than it is now, as you know. Michael said you rewrite, but the first comment I got was a handwritten comment from a little Breakout Productions, and they said very funny and interesting, but not right for us. Well, I was really encouraged. The next thing I did was I thought, I'll try to get an agent, dag nabbit. Well, this is back when you could still find Jonathan Lazier. I said, why not go to the top? He's kind of a big shot.
Go to the top.
And he was, at that time, he was over in Hudson, Wisconsin. I said, that's not too far away. So I drove over there. Hey, why not? He's got a coffee shop. At that time, he had a coffee shop right under his office. I said, hey, why not get him a coffee coupon and stick it in my book? At that time, I had self-published my book, so it wasn't a manuscript, it was a book. It looked like a book. He read it. He actually wrote back to me, thank you for allowing us the opportunity to consider Z as for Xenophobe, and thank you, too, for the generous gift certificate. Brown-nosing, bribing, for whatever you can do. My staff and I really enjoyed the break. You crafted a whale tale. If aliens landed on the planet and picked up a copy of your book, they wouldn't have any idea of the farce. Perhaps the same could be said of most people already here. For some reason, your book conjures up Steve Zissou, and that's not bad. Although we enjoyed it, blah, 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 it's not quite right for us. We're mostly nonfiction. Thanks again. We wish you all the best. Sa, sa, sa. That did more to brighten my whole year, practically. Mm-hmm. Well, Michael was there when I talked to Tyree Campbell. I brought my little self-published book. And I just just went right up to him and said, here, look at this. And he took it, and right on the spot. He started reading it, and he says, there's words here. And it looks like you've written it. And he took it.
Did you spell?
Yeah, and there's some spelling and everything. So, Hillary, we went back and forth for a long time. And then one day, I got this really kind of nebulous email.
You got one of Tyree's emails, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah. And it was like, well, you know, it's got this, it's got that, because it. And then at the end of it, he says, I guess this means we're going to publish it. And it was like, again, I had to read it a couple times, and it was just a thrill. Of course, it took another probably year and a half before it actually got published, but. Now it's done, and it was mostly serendipitous, handing him something that was already, you know, in a book form, probably swayed him a little more than
probably
if I, yeah. So it's
But, you know, I've been hammering away at all sorts of people, and you know, I would have handed this book out to anybody at that point, and I just
total
happened
strangers
to...
on the street.
Yes, exactly.
The person who took over Robert Jordan's franchise talked about how he traced down Moshe Fedek at a Worldcon and said, here, look at my stuff. And the guy, he ended up taking his novel, and he's very happy he did. It was his 13th novel that he had written in 3 years.
I should say that every etiquette panel you're going
to
get at a con
is telling you not to do this.
Yes,
Every etiquette panel you get at a con is going to tell you not to.
Don't
hand your manuscript to, that what you're supposed to do is ask the card, you know.
Probably one of the best examples of doing that the right way, similar to what Terry did with that agent. I was talking about this with Brian Keene a few years back at Convergence. Mm-hmm. He talked about how he sold his first novel.
Right.
Was he had gone to World Horror Convention, and World Horror Convention was having a pitch session with publishers. And he said, and I'm standing in this line, watching this guy behind the desk just wilting, this editor, who everybody's pitching to. You had like 2 minutes to pitch. So I broke out of the line, and I went down to the coffee shop, and I bought him a cup of coffee, and I bought him a croissant. And when it was my turn, I handed it to him. I said, it looks like you're exhausted. I'm not going to bug you. Here's some coffee and a croissant. If you want to find me in the bar and talk later, I'll be in the bar. And the guy went to the bar and found him and said, thanks for the coffee and the food. Mm-hmm. And then they talked about his book in the bar for 30 minutes.
Yes.
As opposed to a two-minute pitch session.
You've been listening to the podcast from MinSpec, the Minnesota Speculative Fiction Writers Group. This is Episode 6, Rejection, Part 1 of 2. For length reasons, this podcast is divided into two parts. Catch you on the flip side.